Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about what we learn from God's account of our history.
Well, we're going through the book, Kingdom, Finding Your True Self, which I've written and I really haven't launched yet, but I'm thinking through a lot of the passages. So it's kind of fun to do this together with mm-hmm. you and then also with you, Bernadette, because you ask a lot of good questions. And that, you know, that's a big deal when you're trying to get something out and understand something out of the scriptures. If you ask good questions, that gets you far down the road as far as understanding the essence of what passages are talking mm-hmm. about.
Yeah, and if you have questions or comments or just want to join the discussion, contact us at 4@fourthstream.com. That's our email, 4@fourthstream.com.
So we started with a passage in Matthew that talks about turning or repenting mm-hmm. and turning from and turning toward. So we've discussed that a little bit. Then we also talked about the door to the kingdom and how it's really the door of humility. If you're going to look for one right. word to describe it, if we understand humility, then we've got our hand on the handle of the door to the kingdom of heaven. And obviously that's Jesus, and I mean he's like the ultimate picture of complete humility
mm-hmm.
and
servanthood.
Uh-huh. Well, it didn't mean he was a milquetoast,
right.
which we're going to see in this passage right here, but the reality was that he represented true humility. And he invites us into that, and that's where the Beatitudes fit in, and that's why we talked about those the last time that we
right.
were together. So we're working our way through the book of Matthew, and the reason we are is that Matthew talks about the kingdom all the way through,
right.
and he explains the kingdom, because as you look at the entirety of the Gospels and really the entirety of the Scriptures, it's king first, then comes the kingdom, and then the church flows out of that. So all these beautiful representations that are happening in our city right now mm-hmm. are flowing out of our connection with the king and the fact that the kingdom seed is being planted in our city.
Yeah, when you think about the incarnation, that was God coming to earth, and it's God's kingdom. It's God being here. So the church has to flow out of that because the church serves that.
So as you mentioned, Jesus was very cognizant of history when it came to the Jews. He understood it. He was a Jew. He was a rabbi of the Jews. And he understood things about their history that apparently they didn't pick up. And so consequently, he had conflict with religious leaders because his view of history was different than their view.
And as we see, as we continue to go through the book, we'll see how much he loved his Jewish brothers, how much he loved the Jews, God's chosen people. What he didn't love were people who came out of that and made their own rules and found the wrong kind of pride in that.
Well, and that's kind of the story of religious history is mm-hmm. you figure out how to extort what you
yeah.
want from other people. It might not always
so that
be
you
money,
have power.
Power, recognition, whatever it might be. And that was the problem, and that's where the rub was. And it comes up in this passage that we're going to look at in the book of Matthew today.
So where we are today is in Matthew 5, verses 17 through 20, and I'm reading this out of the Message. "Don't suppose for a minute that I have come to demolish the scriptures, either God's law or the prophets. I'm not here to demolish, but to complete. I'm going to put it all together in a vast panorama. God's law is more real and lasting than the stars in the sky and the ground at your feet. And long after stars burn out and earth wears out, God's law will be alive and working." I love thinking about that.
Well, you know, in my translation, in the New American Standard, it says, "Until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law." And that's interesting because, you know, the job of the scribes was to mm-hmm. oversee that whole process because, you know, they didn't have printing presses. That there were copies that were made and they were distributed around the world. So it was a whole class of people that basically were to keep the accuracy of the scriptures. And they did that to their credit. They
yes.
were very good about that.
And each letter that was drawn was watched over by someone, right? And that was watched over by someone else,
yes.
if I understand
that
correctly.
In fact, each character in the letter, I mean, they
wow.
were like painstakingly careful. So they had a role. So when he says, not even the smallest letter or stroke shall pass away from the law until all is accomplished, his audience Mm-hmm. They knew what he was talking about. I mean, they really did.
Uh-huh. He was pointing to them without actually pointing to them. Trivialize even the smallest item in God's law, and you will only have trivialized yourself. But take it seriously. Show the way for others, and you will find honor in the kingdom. Unless you do far better than the Pharisees in the matters of right living, you won't know the first thing about entering the kingdom.
Well, it's an interesting concept, and there are a lot of things that are talked about in the scriptures outside of the book of Matthew. But when it comes to the law had a specific purpose, and that purpose was to stand it up against, you know, because the law wasn't the first thing that came. You know, faith came before the law. Mm-hmm. That's the conversation over in the book of Romans. You know, Abraham was 430 years before Moses. So faith was there before the law, but the law was given so that people, humans from every nation under heaven could understand how far short of the glory of God that we fall. So you've got the law was given for a specific purpose, and it was to show us our need for humbly coming to God and coming through the door that God was going to provide through his Messiah.
And I think it's easy to forget that faith came before law, because somehow you feel that like if faith came after law, then if that's the case, which it's not, but if that were the case, then when faith comes, then law means nothing. And it doesn't now mean that the law means nothing. It just means that Jesus came and he was the completion of it.
Yeah, I like that word. I think that that's a really good translation. In mine, it says fulfill. But don't think that I came to abolish the law. Mm-hmm. Or I think you said demolish it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we're not just hacking that part off and throwing it away.
It's still there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be there until the stars fall out of the heavens. And I don't think that's going to necessarily happen quite in that way. So the law is always going to be there. So Jesus came not to abolish the law or the prophets. Now that's interesting in and of itself because the law came through Moses, and you had the Levitical law and the priesthood and all the different things, but built on that were the words of the prophets. So the prophets took the law, they looked at the people and the kings and the nations around them, mm-hmm. and they would apply the law. That's why they were so unpopular. And it's why, you know, people that do that in our culture, in our world right now, are unpopular. Because mm-hmm. who wants to hold up the law? You hold up the law, and then all of a sudden, your unrighteousness comes alive, and you have to deal with
it. And you have to submit, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So for when he says, I didn't come to abolish the law and the prophets, I came to fulfill. And for truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until all is accomplished. So, you know, that whole idea that, you know, they were under law and now they're under grace. The law was a part of God's grace. Mm-hmm. So they're not antithetical to each other. One was incomplete without the other. Mm-hmm. Grace and truth have been realized in Jesus Christ. And that's just that's the beautiful fulfillment of the purpose of the law.
I think it's interesting to watch Jesus in these, as he interacts with the Pharisees, scribes and Pharisees, and you can feel his agitation.
Oh, yes.
It's like he just can't bear having someone sort of put God in a box or reduce him to a bunch of rules about how many steps you can take on the Sabbath or that you can't heal somebody on the Sabbath.
Yeah, they had gone bananas.
Yeah, they had found such power in who they were, in their leadership role, rather than being servant leaders, as we kind of talk about in our Christian culture, they had done just the opposite. But what I think is interesting is to read that and just, you can feel Jesus's agitation over coming into contact with this absolute, not just misrepresentation of God, but that they were leading people astray, and not just leading them astray, but it was so oppressive. These people were oppressive. His people.
Well, and they were proud and smug mm-hmm. about it, to top it off. So Jesus immediately is in conflict with the scribes and Pharisees because he came not to abolish their law, but to fulfill it. But in fulfilling it, he explained things that they were willing to ignore. And mm-hmm. that's another passage that we're going to look at in the book of Matthew as this unfolds. Whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments, even the smallest one, and teaches others to do the same, which is what the scribes and the Pharisees were doing, shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. It's no wonder they hated him.
Oh, you just see them gritting their teeth? Just steam coming out of their ears.
For I say to you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter. And here it is, the kingdom of heaven. And see, that's that whole thing about what this book is about related to the kingdom, because we want to enter into the kingdom through the doorway of the king. And these religious leaders were shutting up the door.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there was such a conflict. Nowhere in the so-called, and I like to say so-called, Old and New Testaments are they called the Old and New Testaments. It's a man-made distinction. So that whole idea, well, that was Old Testament,
right?
This is New Testament, forget that if you hear that from anybody. The real question is whether or not God has spoken. And if he has spoken, we should devote ourselves to hearing the true words of God, and all religion should just get out of the way of that.
Yeah, you're talking about just the whole story and whether God has spoken. I love so many things about the Bible. I love that it's full of interesting and exciting stories, which are actually our history. They're not just stories in the One Testament. I love how it demonstrates the truth and the outworking of principles that are lived or ignored. You know, it shows both. Mm-hmm. I love not just how God shows up for his people, but he shows up for himself.
Yes.
You know, he doesn't need me to do that. I'm just supposed to side with him, not expect him to side with me.
We get to participate in his glory.
I can go on. I have to go on. I love that while it doesn't hide any of our humanness or our frailties, God loves us endlessly and covers us in a way that makes us flawless. I mean, who can ignore a God like that? He's exciting. He's exceedingly strong. He's God of the angel armies. That's how it talks about it in the Message. And yet he is so, so kind. Even in the midst of running into the Pharisees who he's totally opposed to how they're living, he still completely loves them and is still trying to woo them to understand who he is and who God really is.
So in this kingdom passage, and you're going to see it over and over again, God is saying, I have spoken. Your religious leaders have twisted what I have spoken, and I will help you find what is true. And there's nothing religious about Jesus. That's important to understand. Mm-hmm. You're not going to find Jesus through religion. You're going to find him through relationship and through your connection with him. It takes the work of God in our lives in order to enter the kingdom of heaven. So it's his work, but this in no way means that we spend our lives sitting on our hands, immobile for the purposes of God. Jesus has plenty to say about the inferior aspects of religion, but he also has much to say about his life changing kingship over our lives.
Yeah, this is the most exciting part. We get to be changed.
Yes.
And that's the kingship. We get to be whole, but that also means we get to feel whole. It's not just something in theory. We get to be whole. We get to have our shattered hearts, our heartbroken hearts put together again, and we get to not only be whole, we get to feel whole, because that's what he came to do.
And that happens from the inside out. Hey, this is a book, Kingdom, Finding Your True Self, which we're going to continue to talk about here for a number of days, I believe. Forstream.com, unless Bernadette says you can't do it anymore. Forstream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to Forstream.com and click on the radio button.
Together, we're finding hope at Forstream.com.